All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into Hosea, specifically chapter 11.
Oh, yeah, Hosea 11. It's such an interesting chapter.
It is. And we're going to be using excerpts from Dr. John Oswalt's lectures.
You know, Dr. Oswalt, he really has such a great way of bringing the text to life.
Yeah, he does. So for our listeners out there who really want to understand Hosea 11, but maybe don't have time to go through all of Dr. Oswalt's lectures.
I mean, who does?
Yeah, this deep dive is for you.
Yeah.
One of the things that really jumped out at me from Dr. Oswalt's work is how God kind of shifts metaphors in chapter 11.
Hmm.
You know, we've got that familiar husband and wife imagery earlier in Hosea.
Right, right.
But then in chapter 11, things seem to move into more of a parent-child dynamic.
Oh, that's a really good point. I think, you know, it's subtle, but it's really powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, the husband and wife imagery, you know, it emphasizes covenant, commitment, love.
Right.
But that parent-child imagery, I think, goes even deeper. You know, it touches on something so primal, so unconditional.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's like it's a love that's rooted in creation itself.
It really makes you reconsider how we understand God's love, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's not just about like rules or obligations, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's so much deeper than that.
It's like this fierce, protective, and almost vulnerable love.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I think, you know, that vulnerability is really on full display in chapter 11. God calling Israel his son, it actually seems to push them further away.
Yeah, it's paradoxical, isn't it?
It is, but Dr. Oswalt, he has these great examples to help us make sense of it.
I was just thinking about the toddler running away.
Yeah.
The teenager slamming the door.
Oh, or even like a dog, you know, you call a dog and it runs in the opposite direction.
It's so true. And we laugh, but it's like we all do that, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, we all have that instinct to resist authority, even when we know it's for our own good.
Right. It's like that innate desire for control.
Yeah. That need for independence, that fear of surrender.
And so we end up turning to things we can control.
Our idols.
Our idols, exactly.
Things that give us that illusion of power, you know.
But it's a false sense of security.
Right. Like Dr. Oswalt says, it's like building a house on sand.
Mm-hmm. And it's at this point that I think Dr. Oswalt's personal background really adds something special to his interpretation.
Oh, you mean about how he grew up on a farm?
Yeah. He talks about how that shaped his understanding of God's love.
You know, I love that about Dr. Oswalt, how he brings his own life into his scholarship. It makes it so much more relatable.
Yeah, definitely. He uses this really powerful analogy, comparing God's love to a parent teaching their child to walk.
Right. It's not just about giving instructions. It's about that constant care, picking them up when they fall, encouraging them to try again.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. You know, it's such a beautiful picture of God's patience and love.
And it's about guiding us. You know, Dr. Oswalt emphasizes that God isn't about forcing us into submission or breaking our will.
Right. He talks about those humane cords, which is such an interesting phrase.
Yeah, humane cords. It's not what we typically associate with divine discipline, is it?
It really isn't. It makes you think about what discipline really means in the context of God's love.
It does. It's like he's challenging our preconceived notions of this harsh, punishing God.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead, he's showing us a God of tenderness, a God of compassion.
But those humane cords, sometimes they feel a lot like consequences, you know, when we make choices that lead to pain, when we experience the fallout of our own rebellion.
That's true. It's like the Israelites facing exile. They lost everything.
They did. And that brings us to what I think is one of the most emotional verses in the whole chapter, verse 8. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel?
Oh, that verse just gets me every time.
Me too.
It's raw. It's like you can hear the heartbreak in God's voice.
And it's a reminder that even in his anger, even when he disciplines us, his ultimate desire is not to destroy us.
Right. It's to refine us, to bring us back to himself.
Absolutely. Which leads to another one of my favorite lines in this chapter. I am God and not a man.
Oh, that's a powerful statement.
It is. I mean, it's a declaration of his holiness, his otherness, but it's also a statement of hope.
Yeah, because he is God, he can offer us something beyond our limited human understanding.
Like what he says about the blast furnace and the hay bales.
Oh, right. That analogy is so vivid.
I know. He compares God's holiness to this raging fire, and we're like these flammable hay bales.
It makes you think about the intensity of that refining process, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It's not always comfortable, but it's through that fire that we're transformed.
Mm-hmm. Into something stronger, more resilient.
Absolutely, like being forged in fire.
Exactly.
So we've talked about this shift from husband-wife to parent-child. God's vulnerability, the resistance to surrender, his patience, the humane cords, and even the blast furnace. Where do we go from here? What other treasures are hidden in Hosea 11?
Well, there's still so much to unpack. Like, how do we reconcile God's holiness with his compassion? And what about those intriguing parallels between Hosea and the life of Jesus?
Oh, that's right. Dr. Oswald makes some fascinating connections there. We've got a lot more to explore, so stay tuned.
Yes, stay with us. We're just getting started. It's not about destroying us, though, is it?
Right, right.
That blast furnace, it's not meant to incinerate us. It's meant to refine us.
Like turning those hay bales into something new and strong.
Yeah, like Damascus steel or something.
Okay, that's a good image.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder about something, you know, we've been talking about God's holiness.
Yeah.
This really intense aspect of his nature.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reconcile that with this idea of a loving and compassionate God?
That's a great question. And it's one that I think a lot of people struggle with, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think Dr. Oswald, he gives us a really helpful perspective on this.
Okay.
He reminds us that God isn't some distant, unfeeling deity.
Right.
You know, he's intimately involved in our lives. He walks with us through every trial, every heartbreak.
Yeah, he's not just watching from a distance, is he?
Not at all. He's right there with us in the fire.
Which reminds me of something else Dr. Oswald brings up.
Mm.
That parallel he draws between Hosea 11.1, where God says, "Out of Egypt I called my son."
Right.
And the story of Jesus fleeing to Egypt as a child.
Oh, that's a really interesting connection. It's not a direct prophecy or anything like that.
Right, right.
But it's more like a literary echo.
Yeah.
You know, a way of showing how these events, they kind of correspond to each other, how they point to a deeper truth.
It's almost like seeing these threads woven together in this larger tapestry, right?
Exactly. And speaking of patterns, Dr. Oswald, he gets pretty real about the challenges facing the church today.
Yeah.
And he draws some pretty thought-provoking parallels to the ancient Israelites.
Yeah, his comments about young people leaving the church, that really stood out to me.
Oh, absolutely.
He argues that we can't just rely on youth ministry to build a strong foundation of faith.
Yeah, he's not saying youth ministry is bad or anything.
Right.
But he's saying it can't be the only thing, right?
It's got to start somewhere else.
Yeah, it's got to start in the home.
In the family.
In the family. That's where it begins.
Like trying to build a skyscraper on sand, you know?
Exactly.
You need that deep, unshakable foundation.
And that starts with parents.
With family.
Modeling and instilling faith in the next generation.
And this is where I think the parallels to the ancient Israelites become so relevant.
Mm-hmm.
They were craving control, seeking instant gratification from their idols.
Right. And don't we see that same dynamic today? I mean, our culture is obsessed with instant gratification.
Oh, yeah. It's all about getting what you want when you want it.
Exactly. It's that give me mentality.
Tough to break free from.
It is.
Even when we know it's not ultimately satisfying.
But the truth is, real fulfillment, lasting joy,
yeah,
it comes from surrender.
From letting go.
Letting go of our need to control.
Our fear of the unknown.
Yeah. And trusting in a God who knows us better than we know ourselves.
It's embracing that paradox, isn't it? True freedom is found in surrender.
Exactly. It's in letting go of our tight grip on life that we find ourselves in the loving embrace of a God who never lets go of us.
And a God who loves us unconditionally, even when we're at our most unlovable.
Yes. Remember those words from verse 8.
How can I give you up?
That's the heart of God laid bare.
So powerful.
But it does leave us with a question.
Oh.
How do we take these ancient words, this profound message of love and redemption,
mm-hmm,
and apply it to our modern lives?
That's the big question, isn't it?
It is. How do we live out this truth in a world that often feels so far removed from the world of Hosea?
Yeah. What does that even look like?
Well, Dr. Oswald, he gives us this final image, and it's incredibly powerful.
Okay.
He talks about the dead albatross.
The dead albatross.
Yeah, the one that we carry when we refuse to forgive.
Oh, he's referencing Coleridge's poem, right?
Right.
The Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yes.
Where the mariner has to wear that albatross he killed as a constant reminder of his sin.
It's such a powerful metaphor
for
the burden we carry when we hold on to anger, resentment, bitterness.
It's heavy stuff.
It is. It weighs us down, it suffocates us, and it prevents us from experiencing the fullness of God's love.
Like a wall between us and God.
Yes, and between us and others.
And that wall needs to come down.
It does. But how?
That's the question.
How do we break free from the grip of unforgiveness?
It's not easy, that's for sure.
It's not. But it is possible.
Okay, so how?
Well, Dr. Oswald, he points us back to the refiner's fire.
The refiner's fire.
Forgiveness, it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
It can be painful.
Yeah.
But it's through that fire, that intense heat of letting go, that we're truly set free.
Trading that heavy, lifeless albatross for wings.
Wings of freedom, allowing us to soar above our past hurts.
Above those gledges.
Our limitations.
Wow. So we've got this idea of forgiveness as a process,
mm-hmm,
of letting go of those burdens.
And embracing the freedom that comes with that.
Embracing the freedom.
Yeah.
So how do we actually do that?
Well, I think it starts with awareness.
Okay.
Recognizing those dead albatrosses that we're clinging to, you know, those areas of unforgiveness.
Resentment, bitterness.
Yeah, all of that. It might be a past hurt.
Broken relationship.
A grudge.
Yeah. I think we all have those.
We do. And once we've identified them, then what?
Right, what then?
Well, it's about making a conscious choice.
Okay.
To surrender those things to God. To admit that we can't do it on our own.
We need his help.
We need his grace.
His power.
To break those chains of unforgiveness.
And that's probably not a one-time thing, is it?
No, it's a process, a journey, and there will be ups and downs, moments of doubt and struggle.
For sure.
But in those moments, we need to lean into God's love, to trust in his promise to never leave us.
Never forsake us?
Never.
It's like we're learning to fly, you know, to use those wings of freedom we've been given.
I love that image.
And just like learning to fly takes practice, so does learning to live in the freedom of forgiveness.
And just as a bird needs both wings to soar, we need both the grace of God and our own willingness to let go.
To truly experience that transformation.
Yes.
Powerful stuff. So as we kind of wrap up this section on the dead albatross,
mm-hmm.
What are some key takeaways for our listeners? What should they be thinking about as we move into the final part of our deep dive?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that forgiveness is possible. It's a process, but it's a process worth going through. And when we finally let go of those things that are weighing us down, we can experience true freedom, the kind of freedom that only God can offer. It is a process, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
It is. And it really makes me think about, you know, how that dead albatross image connects back to the refiner's fire.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just about getting rid of the bad stuff, the unforgiveness.
Right.
It's about like creating something new, something beautiful.
Yeah. Like being forged and shaped into something stronger.
Exactly.
So we're not just talking about forgiveness, right?
No, it's bigger than that.
It's about transformation.
It is about becoming something more.
But as we've been saying, that process, it can be tough.
Oh, yeah. It can be painful.
Messy. Even.
Definitely.
But it's in that surrender, that letting go, that we really find true freedom.
That's where the transformation happens.
Absolutely. So if we're willing to step into that fire, to let go of the things that are weighing us down,
mm-hmm.
What does that look like practically? How do we actually do that?
I think it starts with awareness.
Okay, awareness of what?
Awareness of those dead albatrosses, you know, those areas where we're holding on to unforgiveness.
Okay, so like past hurts.
Yeah, past hurts, broken relationships, grudges.
Mm-hmm. So once we've identified those things.
Right.
What's next?
We make a choice, a conscious choice to surrender them to God.
To let go.
To let go and admit that we can't do it on our own.
We need his help.
We do. We need his grace, his power.
To break free.
To break free.
From those chains.
Yes.
And I imagine that's not always a one and done kind of thing.
No, it's a journey. It's a process.
With ups and downs.
Exactly. There will be moments of doubt, of struggle.
Yeah.
But in those moments, we need to remember God's love.
His faithfulness.
His promise to never leave us.
To never forsake us.
That's right.
So it's like we're learning to fly, you know, with those wings of freedom.
I love that image of wings.
But just like learning to fly, you know, it takes practice.
It does.
Perseverance.
It's, yeah. And patience.
So much of this comes back to trusting God, doesn't it?
It really does. Trusting in his love, his power, his plan for our lives.
Even when it's hard.
Especially when it's hard.
And remembering that he's always with us.
Always.
Through the fire, through the storms.
He never leaves our side.
Wow. Well, I think that about wraps up our deep dive into Hosea 11.
It does.
This has been such a rich and thought-provoking conversation, and I really hope it's encouraged our listeners.
Me too.
To, you know, lean into God's love,
mm-hmm.
even when things are tough.
To trust in his process.
And to embrace that transformative power of forgiveness.
Yes. Forgiveness and surrender. Those are the keys to true freedom.
Freedom and new life.
Amen to that.
Thanks for joining us on this journey through Hosea 11, everyone. We'll see you next time. CETE.